Hey guys, what's up? It's Josh, JC Alfelto for The Writer's Lens. And today is going to be episode 9, which is going to be about storytelling and the origins of it, as I'm going to be trying to segue here into a new series where my last one, if you were able to stick around for that, was talking about my path to getting published, what it was like getting published over the last few years, and what it was like pursuing my passion, what it was like instilling some good work ethic into what I was doing, and ultimately realizing that I had a long way to go. So if you were able to catch that first 8 episodes of my podcast, or just want to recap it, you're obviously free to binge watch the first season, as it were. But I was able to culminate all of that with a great interview with Willie and Rachel Scott, who are the co-founders of the Better Than Blended platform and authors of Better Than Blended. So all that being said, though, I'm wanting to tackle now a very broad and large topic, which is the origins of storytelling and why do we tell stories? You know, what's the purpose of telling stories in the first place? Seeing as this is The Writer's Lens, it seemed like a pretty good thing I should probably be talking about, right? I mean, I'm in the business of telling stories, so I should probably talk a little bit about what does it mean to be a storyteller. So if you're sick of all the political memes and talk over social media or podcasts, then hey, this is the podcast for you, because I'm not going to be talking about any of that over the next 15 minutes or so. So let's get going. But where to begin? The origins of storytelling in general are something that are very difficult to put a stamp on, because as the human race goes, we are absolutely obsessed with writing things down. I mean, this is something that you can find across every culture, every civilization, every single major people group that has existed over the last, you know, thousands of years, generations. We love writing stuff down. We are a complex organism that just is enamored with the idea of telling stories and communicating our thoughts and experiences and recounting large events by carving it into stone or writing it on pieces of paper. I mean, or in today's sense, putting it down in a computer in a digital format. I mean, we just can't get enough of it. And the thing is that since I can't really get a great handle on when that actually happened, I'm sure you could Google it, but we know from ancient hieroglyphics, we know from cave paintings, we know from, like Dead Sea Scrolls, all that kind of jazz. We are a species that just loves to write down things and talk about them over and over again, which is really cool because I actually really like that stuff. You know, I like it a lot. And the purpose that's been behind it, if you really want to get technical, so I did do a little more legwork on this one to try to understand the definition, if you will, of storytelling. And that is that storytelling in general has much social and cultural significance, which can often be done with improv and some form of theatric or even embellishment, which I totally relate to because I come from a family of people that love to tell tall tales. I blame my father entirely for that trait because he loves to embellish stories all the time. I mean, if you ask him to tell a story 7 days out of the week, we'll get 7 different versions. So, Dan, I know you might be listening to this, so take it as a compliment because I think I got it from you, which is why I love to tell stories. But I always joke with him and with any of my brothers that if our father had been in charge of helping to write the events of maybe Jesus in his lifetime, the miracles that are written about would have been that much more miraculous if my father had been there recording it. Okay. I'm pretty darn sure that would have happened. And I probably would be no slouch in that department either. So kudos to Papa Felto for passing on that trait of embellishment. Thanks, Dad. We love you. But storytelling over the generations has been used as a form of entertainment, education, preserving culture, and even instilling moral values, which those items are things that I do want to unpack a bit, because there is quite a bit to unpack in that statement, and I will be talking about those in subsequent episodes. But the one big question is how do we come up with a story then in general? I mean, if we're going to be doing all these things, if the purpose behind it is to entertain people, to educate them, to pass along information, you know, how exactly to go about doing it. Now, there is a graph that you can find online, which is very simple to follow, and it literally looks like a heartbeat. Okay, if you've ever seen this before, it's pretty much the way every major narrative follows storytelling, and multiple people have used this over the years. I mean, screenwriters use this, common authors use this, but it looks literally like a heartbeat. So if you look like that symbol in the hospital bed when you see bloop, you know, from your heartbeat, that's exactly what it looks like almost. But it has a few components to it. But you have an opener, which is that flat line on the ground. And I hope to have this on a video on YouTube so you can actually see what I'm talking about. But it has a flat line. It's called the story arc, okay, if you wanted to look it up. But has like a flat line, which is basically your exposition, which is where you're giving all this information about what's happening following what is known as an inciting incident, which I always get in trouble for with my fellow writers. They say that I don't put enough in my inciting incidents, which is basically what is the catalyst to start the story. If you really need to buckle down and understand what that is, it's the catalyst, it's the opener. Think of any movie you've seen where something happens in the beginning and there's kind of a mystery as to what happened. Okay, think of Jurassic Park. If you've seen that film, there's a guy that gets eaten by a raptor in the very beginning of the film, and it kind of gives this foreboding sense of something bad is going to happen, but what, right? So the rest of the story is a little bit of exposition, which is basically giving more information that will be pertinent to the rest of the story. And then as we go upwards, it's rising action, so things are happening, there's more stuff going on, until ultimately we reach the climax of our story, which is the point of all of it. And then, of course, there's a descending piece to that arc, which is now, you know, everything's being tidied up, you know, the end of the climax has happened, the big battle is over, whatever that may be, and then you have your sort of your denouement or conclusion, which is we either wrap things up or we leave open for the next story. So you can find all this stuff. This is not anything revolutionary, but that's the basic arc of telling a story in general. Okay, you're going to have your opener, you're going to have your exposition, you're going to have all of your rising action leading up to the big point, which is your climax, and then you have everything after that that's falling off, and then you have your sort of your fond farewell. Like, this is the conclusion. These are the events that are going to let your mind and your audience and anybody else who's reading your story sort of come down off of that ending, and so you're not just ending it abruptly. Because think about it, if you were watching a movie and it just ended abruptly right after the climax, you'd be like, whoa, you know, what was that about? I mean, just, you know, probably a good example in Star Wars, if in the last movie when Darth Vader, spoiler alert, dies, okay, throws the Emperor into the bottom of the core reactor, that's kind of like the climax of Return of the Jedi, is when Vader does this to the Emperor and he defeats evil. Well, if the movie would have just ended right there, you'd probably be like, okay, well, what happened after that? Did Luke save his body? Did they actually end up beating, you know, the Empire's forces? What happened to all the Ewoks? People probably don't care as much about the Ewoks, actually. But but you'd want to know, there'd have to be sort of a time period after that to kind of wrap things up. And all great stories are able to do that, to follow that basic format. And that's something that even I, you know, writing, I don't mean to make that sound like even I, but but as an author, when you're writing stories, you want to be able to follow a similar pattern, because, you know, that's how people follow it best. You know, they're drawn in at the beginning, they're given more information as you go, reaches a header of whatever that may be, and then of course you have your conclusion afterwards. And that's how my Road to Mars story would also be done. So keeping all that in mind as well, I wanted to get back and talk a little bit about humans and how we tell stories and the uniqueness of it. Now, there are animals out there in, you know, amongst us in the animal kingdom that have the ability to communicate with each other. You know, honeybees, for instance, going out and looking for pollen. I think this is a great example. They will go out and they'll look for the best flowers. And when they come back, now this is all according to what I've learned years and years and years of either watching the Discovery Channel or paying attention in science class, a bee will actually come back and will do a little dance at the hive when it finds a really good stash of pollen. And the other bees will observe it, and then they'll follow to the location of wherever this pollen is and these flowers are to maximize their efforts. This is great, okay? But is this telling a story? I mean, it's communicating information. But is it telling a story, though? Is there all these other elements? No, it's not nearly as complex. Going a little bit further now, think of the story of Coco the gorilla. And many of you have probably heard other numerous stories of how certain gorillas can learn sign language. Now, Coco was a specific story that I can think of where she learned thousands of signs to talk to her handlers slash trainers to communicate her feelings and her emotions and, you know, even things that she wanted, you know, like if she wanted to pet her little, her kitten or something like that. These were things that Coco could communicate. Now, again, is Coco able to create a giant compelling story, write a poem perhaps even, or tell a story in the same way that a human being can? And the overwhelming answer to that is no. Okay, it's just the truth. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean to animal lovers out there or demean the gorilla community. It's just the truth, okay? It's just the truth. And it's something that really does set us apart as human beings, is that we have this capacity to tell stories and recount these large events, because we're really into the business of telling deep, engaging, and emotionally sympathetic stories to retell, like I said, and recount large events in our lifetimes and even in our history so that we can go back to them. It's a very fascinating phenomenon when you really start to think about it, how we're the only creature that does that. You know, we're the only ones to do that. It's almost like there's a story ingrained in us and every person has one and they just have to get it out. And if you think about it in a weird way too, it's almost like useless information. I mean, if you're a fiction writer like I am, the one question you got to ask yourself is what I'm doing even meaningful? You know, is it good for me to jump into imaginary worlds and talk about imaginary characters with imaginary motives and imaginary villains and just imaginary places? Is that even a good thing for me to do? And funny thing is that if you do enough research on it, the overwhelming answer is actually, yeah, it's a good thing to do. It's actually good for you. Research is showing more and more that reading fiction is a good thing for your brain, because it can create a heightened sense of empathy and even help us understand our social situations better. So, for instance, it's kind of like training for the real thing. I mean, I read to my son just about every night, or my wife does. We read little stories to him. He's 2 years old, and he's now beginning to follow like the narrative of certain stories. And these are all very simple stories, of course, because they're kids' books. I'm not reading to him, you know, War and Peace or Lord of the Rings or anything like that. Maybe someday. But he's learning stories about a little boy who maybe lost his dog or is afraid at night because there's lightning outside of his window or thunder or something like that. But he's beginning to put together these pieces of what would it be like to be in that situation if I were there? And this sort of sympathetic response allows us as social creatures to be able to create connections better. I mean, literally to be able to create connections better. And one really cool thing that happened, and I got to share this story too, is I was watching Finding Nemo with my son about a month ago now. And there's a scene in there, spoiler alert, where the father clownfish, Marlin, is reunited with his son, Nemo. Now, the entire movie has been about the father trying to reunite himself with his son. And there's this moment, of course, in the climax, you know, to go back to our story arc, where the father and the son are brought back together. And the father finds the son, and there's this joyous moment. And my son is watching it, and he becomes elated at the fact that they found each other. And he turns to me and he goes, Daddy find, you know, like Daddy find a little fish or something like that. And I said, yeah, that's very good, Liam. So it's clear that he's making that connection. He's seeing that the fact that the father and son went through this arduous journey and they were able to come together. And this is a moment for joy. I mean, this is something to celebrate, the fact that they were able to find one another. And conversely, if they were torn apart, that would be something that we would feel sad about. And so again, I mean, fictional characters, fictional situation, fictional setting, but real things that we can relate to inside of this fictional world. So I see this as a really cool device in terms of helping people to understand maybe other situations. You know, you can even go as far as to say other cultures or the values or the morals of other, people may have, and their perception of reality is ultimately getting reflected in their fiction, which is, again, like I said, really fascinating. That's why to a lot of people, it's like when you read a writer's work and it's a fiction, it's almost like opening up their head and their heart and diving right in and seeing how they perceive the world. You know, how do they sympathize with the rest of the world? How do they see things? It's really quite fascinating to me. And that's why sometimes when I read a book by someone like, you know, Orson Scott Card, or who's one of my favorite authors, or if it's, you know, Stephen King, who just had a birthday, we'll just say Stephen King, you kind of get a window into their world, which if it's King's world, it's got to be absolutely terrifying. Just absolutely, it has to be completely terrifying. But these kinds of things are intrinsic to us as human beings, okay? This need to connect, this need to socialize, this need to make these sort of elaborate understandings of motivations behind people. And we do that in a fictional setting, which is why, like I said, understanding people's motives become easier. And it's why you sit around at a campfire and you might talk about your favorite show and what is a character going to do in the next season. You know, trying to understand why people do what they do. It's one of the reasons why I think Game of Thrones is so popular, because there's, you know, 30, 40, 50 characters and they all have different motivations and they're all colliding with each other. And as human beings, we find that to be very interesting. It's like a big soap opera, but with dragons and magic and all other kinds of stuff. So that's all fun to do. It's all very fun to do. And me as a storyteller, it's fun for me to sit and come up with these imaginary places, but having real life type experiences. So it's an opportunity to teach as it is a much an opportunity to entertain. And again, show is a bit of a reflection of our own values and how we perceive the world. So that's it for today's episode, just kind of introducing storytelling and just the human element there and how we love to tell stories, how we love to be engrossed in stories. So on my next episode, I'll be talking a little bit about how we derive meaning from stories and how that can affect us. So lots of stuff there to cover, a lot to unpack, but I'm looking forward to it. I think this whole series here is going to be very fun to do going forward, as it's basically the crux of why I do what I do. And before I go, just a quick update on what I've been up to. On October 7th of this year, I'll actually have my first book signing of the fall. I'll be in Western PA at Chenango Valley Mall from about 12 to 3 p.m. at Leanna's Books and More. If you want to stop by, come say hey. You know, grab a book. I'll sign it for you. I promise, as long as you buy it. I'm just being honest. So, but I'll be there with a few other local authors in the area, signing some books and hopefully doing some networking as well. So looking forward to that coming up. So until then, guys, like I said, try not to talk too much politics. Give your brain a rest from it and find some creative outlets. Until then, this is Josh J.C. Alfelto for The Writer's Lens.